It is a lecturer of political science at the University of Virginia, Kara Ong Whaley. Kara, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Sam.
Yeah, so we mentioned this. The reason we're talking about this race over here in Illinois is that this is going to have some national implications. The term we keep hearing is litmus test, depending on which way this election goes. Now, you've been were you like out in the field earlier today, Kara?
I was actually out in the field today.
All right.
At polling places, talking to voters, trying to get a sense of what was going on. I live in Charlottesville, Virginia, which of course also received some national attention this year as well. So trying to get a sense of what's going on locally and anecdotally. What voters are thinking.
Sure. So, what are you hearing on the ground? What are you hearing from voters?
Well, Charlottesville tends to be quite liberal, so it's not a very representative sample of the state, of course. Mm-hmm. It's about 80% Democrat, so it's not really representative of the entire state. Mm-hmm. But I think broadly speaking, there is greater turnout than usual. President Trump, his approval rating in the state, I think, is a little bit higher actually than the national average, but it varies, of course, by region in the state. Mm-hmm. So in the southern and western part of the state, he tends to have a higher approval rating versus the northern part of the state, where there's a significant amount of anti-Trump sentiment. Mm-hmm. And so certainly his election and his administration is playing a role, I think, up in the northern part of the state that is not as much the case, I think, in other areas. Mm-hmm. of the state.
Sure.
And both of the candidates, have been somewhat tepid with regard to the president. Ed Gillespie, the Republican candidate, has tried to distance himself a bit from President Trump, even though he has embraced some of the same messaging in the final month of the campaign. Mm-hmm. He preferred to have Vice President Mike Pence campaign for him in the southern part of the state rather than bringing the president in. And that's the first time that a president has not campaigned for a GOP nominee in the state since President Richard Nixon in 1973.
Wow.
So some distancing, but we have heard today that there were some robocalls with President Trump's voice that were deployed in the southern part of the state where there is more support for the president.
Mm-hmm.
And the messaging has been very different in the southern and western part of the state than it has been in the northern part of the state.
Sure. And what can you tell us about the two candidates? We mentioned Republican Ed Gillespie and Democrat Ralph Northam. And I know vaguely a little bit about each of them, but nothing particularly phenomenal stands out about either of these two gentlemen. What can you give us a brief synopsis of who these guys are?
Sure. So I'll start with Ralph Northam, since I've already talked a little bit about Gillespie, and then I'll go back to Gillespie. Try to do equal time.
Yes, of course.
So Ralph Northam has essentially worked his way up within the Democratic Party in this state. He has deep ties within the Democratic Party. He did face a challenge from Tom Perriello, who was a congressman elected on the coattails of President Obama and served one term from 2008 to 2010. But Perriello's challenge was a bit of a surprise, but Ralph Northam still won pretty handily in a very high turnout Democratic primary. The Republican primary was a very low turnout primary.
Mm.
Ralph Northam is a pediatrician. He's a veteran, and has garnered quite a bit of respect overall, I think, in the state. His primary issues are pretty run-of-the-mill Democratic issues. He has focused in his campaign on health care and education. In addition, he has not placed, I think, as much of an emphasis on jobs and economy, although that's certainly part of the messaging. For Ed Gillespie, he is a former chairman of the Republican National Committee, so also part of, quote-unquote party establishment, if you will, on the Republican side. I think one thing that's notable is that he was one of the architects of the Republicans' red map strategy after the 2008 election, in which the Republicans strategized about how to win local and state elections and regain state houses, which we know has been quite successful. And the emphasis placed on, who controls the state house controls who draws how district lines are drawn. And so he was a successful strategist within the Republican Party. And both candidates have raised a significant amount of funds. We've seen record, funding coming from outside spending, from outside groups. There are no restrictions in Virginia on campaign finance. You can raise unlimited sums. So we've had a flood of money, from both sides, on both sides.
Very good.
And I think both sides, I would say, especially, I would note that, there was some negativity in the campaign, but there was some good reporting, I think, also around the state about how there was a great deal of stability going into the fall campaign season. One, I believe, Roanoke Times article said that essentially we had two, quote-unquote, bland candidates, and that was precisely what was needed in these extraordinary times. Soon as President Trump weighed in on the election on Twitter, we quickly started to see increased levels of negativity. And, of course, there have been a great deal of negative ad campaigns on both sides.
Mm-hmm. All right.
In this campaign season.
Sure. All right. So there's a pretty good synopsis there. And I'm wondering, we use the term litmus test. That's what every single media pundit in the country is saying about this race. It's a litmus test. And I'm wondering, what do you think national observers are looking for here? Because I know, obviously, with the Democrats.
Well, I think they're all wrong.
Well, yeah, all right. That's perfect. That's exactly the answer I'm looking for. Expand on that. What do you mean?
Well, it's not really a litmus test. Virginia, I think if anything, people should be looking more towards what happens in the House of Delegate races, not in the gubernatorial races. There's Virginia, overall as a state tends to be more highly educated than the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing where, whatever works, if, for example, Ed Gillespie were to win, it wouldn't necessarily be that we should apply those lessons that the messaging team used, in the last month, focusing on immigration issues, for example. That doesn't necessarily mean that that messaging is going to resonate throughout the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be wrong to think of this as a litmus test.
And why do you think we are seeing, media pundits using that term? Because I would assume it's just we're desperate for answers. We want to make sense of this crazy political environment. But what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think people, there's a lot of people who become experts overnight whenever an election occurs. So I think, without sort of the broader depth and knowledge of the state's history or knowledge of the electorate in the state, I think, I think that's sort of, there's a quick tagline, I think, that picks up, or a quick talking point that picks up and then becomes viral throughout, and everybody picks it up. And it also sort of increases the drama. If there's one thing that we know about the media in terms of biases, that there's a bias towards the most fanatic. So I just, I think the biggest thing is that you know, there are very few who have a good sense of understanding about what the electorate looks like. And this is also an off year election, right? And so the electorate is different now. And so an electorate in future races in some other state could look very different from what the turnout is in Virginia now.
Sure.
So it would be wrong to to generalize the results from this state. Although there certainly have been cases in the past where Virginia has been considered a trendsetter in terms of producing strategies or winning coalitions that have been adopted by presidential candidates.
Mm-hmm. We're talking this afternoon with Kara Ong Whaley. She is a lecturer at the University of Virginia. We're talking about this 2017 Virginia gubernatorial race. The election is ending in about 40 minutes here. Let me ask you, but you mentioned there's no fundraising limits in Virginia, no campaign finance cap. So are these candidates spending money in interesting ways? Because I've been seeing on Twitter, just from some journos I follow out east, they've been constantly uploading photos of just what I would think are kind of bizarre mailers on both sides of the spectrum. But are we seeing money spent in interesting ways that political scientists are paying attention to?
I'm not sure there's anything out of the ordinary. I think that there's a lot more emphasis on social media and digital strategy, though that doesn't necessarily mean more spending. Mm-hmm. I would say that there's a lot of the traditional emphasis on ad buys and media markets. I think one thing that you bring up that's really important to note is the way in which, because we have essentially a divided electorate in this state, especially between more urban areas and rural areas, that the messaging is quite different for the candidates, so they are having to produce different targeted messaging for these different areas. So, for example, Ed Gillespie isn't going to, to focus on protecting gun rights in the northern part of the state, whereas that is, a hot topic that is actually getting printed on issues in the southern part of the state. Mm-hmm. So I think because there's micro targeting of the campaigns, and because there's more information available about voters in particular areas, I think that it doesn't necessarily mean that it costs more money, but that the way that they're able to spend their money is and creating and deploying ads can be more targeted to the messaging they think works in particular districts or particular areas of the state.
Sure. All right, Kara, before we let you go, can I get a prediction from you? What's going to happen tonight?
No, I'm not in the prediction.
Not into prognosticating.
Virginia's a very competitive state, and it really could go either way. Polling is not necessarily reliable. It's been all over the place depending on the method. So it really could go either way. Even though I think Northam, at least by some of the polling and if the exit polls are to be believed, emphasis on to be believed, probably has a slight edge.
All right. We'll accept it. That again, Kara Ong Whaley. She's a lecturer in political science at the University of Virginia. Following today's election as Virginians look to select their next governor. All right. Thanks a lot, Kara. We appreciate the insight.
Thanks so much for having me, Sam.
You bet.